Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Freemasonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. I'm your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Well, the second episode of 2015. In the news this week, I did want to mention that we did go ahead and announce the winners of the Whence Came You theme contest that we had. The theme was obviously Back to the Future, and the winners of the contest were Brother PJ Wasco and Ken Lottman. So congratulations, guys. I've got something coming in the mail, and then I have to mail it to you. So it could be just another week or so before I get that to you. Additionally, the Masonic Roundtable. We've had some great stuff going on the Masonic Roundtable. Unfortunately, I know that next week it's going to be rough for me to make that episode. It's going to be fantastic, though. They're having Brother Anthony Mongelli on, and you may remember we had Brother Anthony Mongelli on this show talking about one of his books, Craftsman Symbology, some time ago. I should have a link to that episode in the show notes, so you can go back and check that out if you'd like before you hear it on the Masonic Roundtable. Brother Mongelli is going to come on, and they're going to talk about some really interesting things about research and how to do it in the proper way, that kind of thing, for Masonic topics. Additionally, I did want to mention that the Esoteric Freemason Minute was a huge success. We got some great feedback, so you can definitely expect more from Brother Matt Wonacki in the future. We are looking to make that a fairly regular segment. Most likely it will be twice a month, but it really depends on Brother Matt Wonacki's schedule. So I'll keep you all up to date on that. I want you to all go ahead and check out midnightfreemasons.org. We put up a new look for the website. I think it's a little bit easier to read. We've got nice, crisp, white background for you to read the text on. And the website looks really nice. So go ahead and check that out. New year, new us. So with that, I also did want to mention that Brother James Fry, who has written some amazing articles for the Midnight Freemasons in the past, is finishing up a series that we're going to start running on the Midnight Freemasons. So he is almost done with that. And as soon as he gets it done, we'll start posting them. Definitely something to look forward to. So with that, we'll get right into the paper of the week, which is a short talk bulletin, volume number 13, March 1935, number 3. It's entitled That Ancient Square. So last week we talked about Masonry's past. This one is really old, talking about really old Masonic stuff here, The Ancient Square, and it's by Unknown. A lot of the older short talk bulletins, author was either unknown for whatever reason, could be lost because of the paperwork. It could just be that back then they didn't want to put a name to the author. That Ancient Square, by Unknown. What one symbol is most typical of Freemasonry as a whole? Mason and non-Mason alike, 9 times out of 10 will answer, the square. Many learned writers on Freemasonry have denominated the square as the most important and vital, most typical and common symbol of the ancient craft. Mackey terms it, quote, one of the most important and significant symbols. McBride said, quote, in Masonry or building, the great dominant law is the law of the square. Newton's words glow. Very early, the square became an emblem of truth, justice, and righteousness, and so it remains to this day through uncountable ages have passed. Simple, familiar, eloquent. It brings from afar a sense of wonder of the dawn, and it still teaches a lesson we find it hard to learn. Hayward speaks of, quote, its history so varied and so ancient, its use so universal. Mackenzie, quote, an important emblem passed into universal science. In his encyclopedia, Kenning copied Mackey's phrase. Klein reverently denominates it as, quote unquote, the great symbol. First Kings describes the temple, states that, quote, all the doors and the posts were square. It is impossible, definitely, to say that the square is the oldest symbol in Freemasonry. Who may determine when the circle, triangle, or square first impressed men's minds? But the square is older than history. Newton speaks of the oldest building known to man. A prehistoric tomb found in the sands at Hierakonpolis is already right-angled. End quote. Masonically, the word square has the same three meanings given the syllable by the word. One, the conception of right-angleness. Our ritual tells us that the square is an angle of 90 degrees of the fourth part of a circle. Two, the builder's tool, one of our working tools, the master's own immovable jewel. And three, that quality of character which has made, quote-unquote, a square man, synonymous not only with the member of our fraternity, but with uprightness, honesty, and dependability. The earliest of the three meanings must have been the mathematical conception. As the French say, quote, it makes us furiously to think, to reflect upon the wisdom and reasoning powers of men who lived 5,000 years ago, that they knew the principles of geometry by which a square can be constructed. Plato, greatest of the Greek philosophers, wrote over the porch of the house in which he taught, quote, let no one who is ignorant of geometry enter my doors. Xenocrates, a follower of Plato, turned away an applicant for the teaching of the academy who was ignorant of geometry with the words, quote, depart, for thou hast not the grip of philosophy. Geometry is so intimately interwoven with architecture and building that geometry or masonry, originally synonymous terms, is a part of most rituals. The science of measurements is concerned with angles, the construction of figures, the solution of problems concerning both and all the rest upon the construction of a right angle, the solutions which sprang from the Pythagorean problem, our 47th problem of Euclid, so prominent in the master's degree. The ancient Greek name of the square was nomon, from whence comes our word knowledge or knowledge. The Greek letter gamma formed like the square standing on the leg, the other pointing to the right, in all probability derived from the square, and nomen, or nomen, in turn derived from the square which the philosophers knew was at the root of their mathematics. Democritus, old philosopher, according to Clement of Alexandria, once exalted, quote, in the construction of plain figures with proof, no one has yet surpassed me, not even the Harpanadaptae of Egypt. In the truth of his boast, we have no interest but much in the Harpanate of Egypt. The name means literally, quote, rope stretchers or rope fasteners. In the Berlin Museum is a deed written on leather dating back to 2000 BC, which speaks of the work of rope stretchers. How much older rope stretching may be as a means of constructing a square is unknown, although the earliest known mathematical handbook, that of Ames, who lived in the 16th or 17th Hyksos dynasty in Egypt, and is apparently a copy of a much older work, which scholars trace back to 3400 BC, does not mention rope stretching as a means of square construction. Most students in school days learned a dozen ways of erecting one line perpendicular to another. It seems strange that in any other people were ever ignorant of such simple mathematics, yet all knowledge had a beginning. Masons learn of Pythagorean's astonishment and delight at his discovery of the principle of the 47th problem. Doubtless, the first man who erected a square by stretching a rope was equally happy over his discovery. Researchers in the manner of construction of pyramids, temples, and mountains in Egypt reveal a very strong feeling on the part of the builders for the proper orientation of their structures. Successfully to place the buildings so that the certain points, corners, or openings might face the sun or a star at a particular time required very exact measurements. Among these, the laying down of the cross axis at a right angle to the main axis of the structure was highly important. It was this which the Harpanadaptae accomplished with a long rope. The cord was first marked off in 12 equal portions, possible by knots, more probable by markers thrust into the body of the rope. The marker's rope was then laid upon the line of which a perpendicular or right angle was to be erected. The rope was pegged down at the third marker from the end and another four markers further on. This left two free ends, 1 3 total parts long, 1 5 total parts long, with these ends of the Harpanadaptae scribed two semicircles. When the point where these two met was connected to the first peg, three parts from the end of the rope, a perfect right angle or square resulted. Authorities have differed and much discussion has been had on the true form of the Masonic square, whether a simple square should be made with legs of equal length and marked with divisions into feet and inches, or with one keg longer than the other and marked as a carpenter's square today. Mackey says, quote, it is proper that it is the true form should be preserved. The French Masons have almost universally given it with one leg longer than the other, thus making it a carpenter's square. The American Masons, following the delineations of Jeremy L. Cross, have, while generally preserving the equality of length in the legs, unnecessarily marked its surface with inches, thus making it an instrument for measuring length and breadth, which it is not. It is simply the trying square of a stonemason, and has a plain surface with the sides embracing an angle of 90 degrees. and it is intended only to test the accuracy of the sides of a stone and to see that the edges are studded and the same. Commenting on this, the editor of the quote-unquote Builder wrote in May of 1928, "This is one of the occasions when this eminent student ventured into a field beyond his own knowledge and attempted to decide a matter of fact from insufficient data. For actually, there is not and never has been any essential difference between the squares used by the carpenters and stone workers, at least not such as differences as Mackie assumes. He seems to imply that French masons were guilty of an innovation in making the square with unequal limbs. This is rather funny because the French and the masons of Europe generally have merely maintained the original form, while English-speaking masonry, or rather the designers of Masonic jewels and furnishings in English-speaking countries, have introduced a new form for the sake, apparently, of its greater symmetry. From medieval times up to the end of the 18th century, all representations of Mason squares show one limb longer than the other. In looking over the series of Masonic designs of different dates, it is possible to observe the gradual lengthening of the shorter limb and the shortening of the longer one, till it is sometimes difficult to be certain at first glance if there is any difference between them. There is absolutely no difference in the use of the square in different crafts. In all, the square is used to test the work, but also to set it out. And a square with a graduated scale on it is at times just as great a convenience for the stonemason as for the carpenter. When workmen made their own squares, there would be no uniformity in size or proportions, and very few would be graduated, though apparently this was sometimes done. It is rather curious that the cut which illustrates this article in Mackie's Encyclopedia actually shows a square with one limb longer than the other. It is to be noted that old operative squares were either made wholly of wood or of wood and metal, as indeed small tri-squares are made today. Having one leg shorter than the other would materially reduce the chances of accident destroying the right angle, which was the tool's essential quality. So that authorities who believe in our equal-legged squares, not necessarily quote-unquote true Masonic squares, have some practical reason for their convictions. It is of interest to recall McBride's explanation of the quote-unquote center, as used in the English lodges, and the point within the circle, familiar to us. He traces the medieval secret of the square to the use of the compasses to make the circle from which the square is laid out. Lines connecting a point placed anywhere on the circumference of a circle to the intersection with the circumference cut by a straight line passing through the center of the circle forms a perfect square. McBride believed that our quote-unquote point within a circle was a direct reference to this early operative method of correcting the angles in the wooden squares of operative cathedral builders, and that our present two perpendicular lines are a corruption of the two lines which connect points on the circle. The symbolism of the square as we know it is also very old. Just how ancient is impossible to say, as the age of the tool or the first conception of mathematical squareness. In 1880, the master of Ionic Lodge number 1781 at Amat, China, speaking on Freemasonry in China, said, quote, "From time immemorial, we find the square and compasses used by Chinese writers to symbolize precisely the same phrases of moral conduct as in our system of Freemasonry. The earliest passage known to me which bears upon the subject is to be found in the Book of History, embracing the period reaching from the 24th to the 7th century before Christ. There is an account of the military expedition where we read, quote, 'Ye officers of government, apply the compasses,' end quote. And in another part of the same venerable record, a magistrate is spoken of as a man of the level, or the level man. The public discourses of Confucius provide us with several Masonic allusions of more or less definite character. For instance, when recounting his own degrees of moral progress in life, the master tells us that only at 75 years of age could he venture to follow the inclinations of his heart without fear of transgressing the limits of the square. This would be 481 BC, but it is the words of the great follower, Mencius, who flourished nearly 200 years later, that we meet with a fuller and more impressive Masonic phraseology. In one chapter, we are taught that just as the most skilled artificers are unable without the aid of a square and compasses to produce perfect rectangulars or perfect circles, so must all men apply these tools figuratively to their lives and the level and the marking line besides, if they would walk in the straight and even paths of wisdom and keep themselves within the bounds of honor and virtue. In Book 4, we read, quote, "The compasses and square are the embodiment of rectangular and the round, just as the prophets of old were the embodiment of due relationships between man and man." In Book 4, we find these words, The master mason in teaching his apprentices makes use of the compasses and the square. Yea, who are engaged in the pursuit of wisdom must also make use of the compasses and the square. In the great learning admitted on all sides to date from between 300 to 400 years before Christ, in chapter 10 we read that a man should be abstained from doing unto others what he would not they should do unto him. This, adds the writer, is called the principle of acting on the square. Independently of the Chinese, all peoples in all ages have thought of this fundamental angle on which depends the solidity and lasting quality of buildings as expressive of the virtues of honesty, uprightness, and morality. Confucius, Plato, the man of Galilee, stating the golden rule in positive form, all make the square an emblem of virtue. In this very antiquity of the craft's greatest symbol is a deep lesson. The nature of the square is as unchanging as truth itself. It was always so. It will always be so. So also are those principles of mind and character symbolized by the square, the tenets of the Builders Guild expressed by a square. They have always been so. They will always be so. From their very nature, they must ring as true on the farthest star as here. So will Freemasonry always read it, that its gentle message perish not from this earth. All right, I hope you guys enjoyed that little look at the ancient square. And the next thing we are going to do is remind you on how to support this show. Of course, we have applications for the Android, Apple, and the Windows Phone, which give you access to this show streaming. Also, to the bonus features, which are the papers we read, and a bonus Masonic wallpaper for your mobile device. Second way you can help support this show is through shopping. So you can go to onnit.com or freemasonryart.com and use the coupon code WCY. At your checkout, you're going to get 10% off, and they'll send a little bit back to this show. And last but not least is the PayPal direct donation. The way that works is you can donate $1 or $2, and that just comes right to the show. And it's by far the most popular way to donate. And we have some amazing contributors to this. Again, this show and everything within WCY Media, or what we call Whence Came You Media, is all listener-supported Masonic education. So it really helps out. And I just want to thank you all in advance for everything you guys have done. It means the world not only to me, but to many of the brothers out there that can't afford to donate, but deserve the Masonic education. So thank you very much. All right, so this one is kind of crazy. In my search for famous Freemasons, I necessarily change up my verbiage a little bit on the search. I've looked, and I did a search for famous Shriners, because as we all know, to be in the shrine, one usually has to be a Freemason, which was the case with this gentleman, Abraham Zapruder. If the last name sounds familiar, it's because you have heard it before. He is the man who filmed the assassination of President John F. Kennedy in Dallas, Texas. Abraham Zapruder was born in Russia on May 15, 1905. He immigrated to the United States in 1920, where he worked for a dress manufacturer in New York. He moved to Dallas in 1941 and worked at Nardis, a local clothing manufacturer. And in 1949, Zapruder started his own company, which he called Jennifer Juniors. The company occupied floors 5 and 6 of the Daltex building at 501 Elm, which by 1963 was across the street from the Texas School Book Depository. A Freemason, Zapruder was a member of Temple Emmanuel L. Congregation. On November 22, 1963, President John F. Kennedy was assassinated in Dallas, Texas, as his limousine drove by the Texas School Book Depository building and through Daly Plaza. In anticipation of President Kennedy's visit, thousands of people lined the streets to view his motorcade. More than 75 amateur and professional photographers took over 500 exposures in and around Dealey Plaza on that day. Included in the crowd was Dallas dressmaker Abraham Zapruder, whose 26 seconds of Kodachrome 8mm film are probably the most astonishing and disturbing footage ever recorded by an amateur photographer. Of all the films taken, Abraham Zapruder's is considered by many to be the most reliable and the best evidence that more than one assassin was at work in Dealey Plaza. Abraham Zapruder died on August 30th, 1970, from stomach cancer. That's it for this week. Please find us on Facebook and follow on Twitter. Check us out on Google+ at the email address wcypodcast@gmail.com. If you would like to get a hold of me for any reason, you can certainly email me at that address, or you can get me at admin@wcypodcast.com. Don't forget to check out the Midnight Freemasons. We have an all-new look there. Our schedule for releasing is the same. We release a new article every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And if you like what you see there, please go ahead and check out some of our other brothers' blogs that write for us. We have Celestial Brotherhood from Brother Aaron Gardner, The Two-Foot Ruler from Brother Jason Richards, and there's a slew of others. Brother Toddy Creason's From Labor to Refreshment is always a great read. I mean, anytime you put something out, it makes me laugh. Some of them are very comical. He's got a great sense of humor, especially this last one called It's Good to Be the Master. So with that, I will talk to you all next week. Stay in the level. For Whence Came You? I'm Robert Johnson.